When we think of alien technosignatures, we usually first think of the ones we're actively looking for right now. This is, of course, radio signals and laser communications that we might serendipitously stumble across with our radio telescopes and equipment. That is the state of SETI right now, and it's based on the assumption that one way or another, aliens use the electromagnetic spectrum for communication. Look for what you know. The argument, however, is often made, and it's fully valid, that aliens may not use radio in favor of better communications based on science we are not yet aware of. In this scenario, radio simply becomes a historic way of communication at some point for all civilizations, like smoke signals and semaphore have with humanity. But radio isn't just a technology, but an inherent property of the universe, and it has one very attractive feature that may never go obsolete because it simply works too well. And that's radar. Radar is strong. Some of our strongest signals are radar, and we know how to look for it. If you want to map out a star system's asteroids, radar just works, and while you could envision other ways to do it, they all still involve light, such as lasers. You could again invoke technologies for which we have no knowledge. Arthur C. Clarke's infamous, any sufficiently advanced technology would appear as magic. That's valid sometimes, but at the same time, if we transported the earliest person from hundreds of thousands of years ago that could be classed as a Homo sapiens, they would recognize the fire in a barbecue pit or gas heater to a degree. They may not know what fuels it, but they would know that something is on fire. Fire hasn't gone obsolete, and neither has the water needed to put it out. Because, like radio, they are properties of the universe itself. Yes, we have other ways to heat things up that would indeed appear as magic to our ancient predecessor, such as the microwave oven. But there it gets nuanced. A microwave is good for a great many things, but it hasn't proven ideal enough to obsolete the old-fashioned electric or gas oven. So it's really a mixed bag. But what you can say is that one thing that will never go obsolete is heat, which is, you guessed it, part of the electromagnetic spectrum, like radio. So it may be situational, where certain attributes of nature itself never go obsolete, and are always used, but the technology from which to take advantage of them advances. That is not to say that there aren't undiscovered areas of science that may lead to currently inconceivable future technologies, but rather that sometimes even very old technologies like fire may never go obsolete, no matter how advanced a civilization gets. But there may be an exception here. There may be one object in nature, again something inherent to the universe, that may go obsolete for a civilization, that leads it to simply get recycled into something else. As surprising as it may seem, it's a civilization's home planet. This may seem inconceivable for us to do, and we very likely never will, but aliens may see this differently. The idea really depends on two things. The first is that it becomes at some point more desirable to live in space than on a planet's surface. And the second is that a star system has limited materials and every bit is needed. We actually fit this bill on both counts if the right things happen in human technological progress, and at some point we'll either need to do something with Earth or hand it over to the aging sun to roast into a cinder, so we might just go this route ourselves in hundreds of millions of years. The first consideration are the benefits of living in space. There aren't many when you first start exploring and colonizing space. It's always a harsh start. This will tend to be limited to other planets and moons, and also low orbit of these worlds and Earth. We're flirting with this now, with a permanent presence in space on the International Space Station, and talk of founding colonies on at least a limited basis on the Moon and Mars. There are visions for more, of course. The SpaceX vision sees millions of people living on Mars in the not-too-distant future, though in reality it's uncertain to what degree this will get realized, and at what rate. Right now, most humans don't want to leave Earth, though there are certainly those that do, and would jump at the chance to be among the first people in history to found a human settlement on another planet, regardless of how harsh the conditions might be. Though myself, I think it will initially be more of a science outpost, perhaps something along the lines of an Antarctic station, than a proper city. But eventually there might come a turning point as space colonization matures, and we have the ability to create megastructure settlements in space. These enormous habitats would be self-sufficient, growing and manufacturing anything they need, and could host enormous populations. For biological humans, Earth may become a low-population world, If humanity goes full on machine civilization, then there really isn't any advantage to living on a planet at all. Space provides a superior environment, especially for a machine built for it. There's no atmosphere to oxidize anything, and it's easy to keep cool at near absolute zero temperatures. And it's just an overall better computing environment if you have the energy generation infrastructure in place to support it. This scenario highlights somewhat of a bias in SETI. There was a signal detected in March of 2003 at Arecibo, later identified by the old SETI at Home program. The signal was at 1420 MHz, SETI's magic watering hole signpost frequency, and appeared narrowband. In some ways, it was like the WOW signal, except that it was far, far weaker. Unlike WOW, however, this signal repeated three times. That should be the magic number. A repeating narrowband signal that didn't appear to be interference should have been interesting, but there was a problem. It was drifting in frequency, meaning that if it were on a planet, the planet would have to be rotating 40 times faster than Earth does. That, along with the signal weakness, and the fact that the area it was in didn't have many close stars, knocked it out. What wasn't considered is if its origin were a rotating spacecraft, as though it's assumed that all signals will come from planets and star systems rather than deep space. Though in fairness, that particular signal was so weak, it's hard to separate it out from a glitch in the system. But back to planet recycling. We often think of Earth fondly. It's our home. Everyone that's ever lived was born here. And while we don't often treat the planet as well as we should, it's hard for a lot of people to envision leaving it, or outright destroying it. But an alien civilization may not see things that way. Rather, they may see their home planet as a source of materials to get to space, an obsolete starting point. And when in space, continue to use its raw materials until it's been entirely converted into parts for more habitats in space, especially if their system is relatively poor in raw materials to begin with. Then it may be a necessity for growth and development. Indeed, our own system only has finite resources, though granted finite in our case still means a lot. But eventually, if we want to get into building things like extensive Dyson swarms and habitats housing billions of people, we may have to disassemble bodies like Mercury to do it, and eventually, maybe even Earth. As a result, there is a Fermi paradox solution here, and it's simply that we have the wrong expectations focusing on searching planetary systems in SETI, and that advanced civilizations generally exist in space and star systems that no longer have planets, or they live in deep space itself. In short, we're looking in the wrong place, working off the wrong assumptions, and thus there is no Fermi paradox because we simply haven't looked in the right places yet. This goes for a lot of things, actually. Black holes and neutron stars, for example, are not prime SETI targets, nor is the center of the galaxy. But that's changing, and there is now some thinking in SETI to start searching in those kinds of places. Within this idea, there are several potentially detectable technosignatures, however, and they may be much longer range than usual. Technosignatures for radio get weaker with distance until they join the background. This is why SETI and radio tends to focus on closer exoplanets, because the further you get, the stronger the signal you need to be broadcasting for it to be detectable. At some point, this would need to be a beacon rather than just a transmission. The stronger the beacon, the more energy needed to transmit. And if you're just hoping to eavesdrop on the internal communications of an alien civilization with a SETI experiment, it's unlikely the aliens would use any more energy for their communications than what is needed. They are going to be weak, other than maybe their radar. For visual SETI, when you're looking for things transiting their stars and blocking the light, the distance it can be seen is much greater. This was the case for Tabby Star, where the light blocking was very significant, up to 22% of the star's total light. So if it had been a solid megastructure responsible, then we would have been detecting it at a distance of about 1600 light years, which is much further than what would be likely for radio. In the case of a disassembled planet, used to make numerous O'Neill cylinders, these giant structures might be detectable blocking the star's light as a kind of Dyson swarm of habitats. Interestingly, these could even be arranged in clouds to function as beacons themselves with little energy expended, just by blocking starlight in an unusual way using geometric shapes formed by groups of habitats. This is similar to the idea of an Arnold louver, where you build a huge baffle to block starlight in an unnatural way, but here it would be arrangements of that civilization's living spaces. Another potential technosignature would be if he found an area of the Milky Way that was strangely devoid of planetary systems around stars, that have chemical makeups that are metal-rich that should have planets but apparently do not. This can happen. On its own, it would not be that out of the ordinary. But if you saw it over and over in the same area of the galaxy, it would look a little strange, but you'd need more. Couple these two technosignatures together, however, and you saw missing planets, but some other odd visual phenomenon going on, then planet disassemblers would come onto the table. A variant would be if you saw a star system that had only one planet, right in the habitable zone, that appeared to be an Earth analog. Think only Earth orbiting the Sun, with none of the other planets existing because they've been disassembled. If you saw this in a number of nearby systems in a cluster, then you might begin to suspect that you're seeing artificially arranged star systems. Of course, to do these sorts of technosignature searches, it would take a long period of time and much larger instruments than what we have now. But in the future, it should come on the table. Thanks for listening. I'm futurist and science fiction author John Michael Gaudier, currently concerned about the solar system. We might be able to save Earth by migrating it in the far future, but Venus and Mercury are goners unless we migrate those as well. They're sun fodder if we don't disassemble them and make stuff out of them. That would be an interesting end for those two worlds indeed, and be sure to check out my books at your favorite online book retailer and subscribe to my channels for regular in-depth explorations into the interesting, weird, and unknown aspects of this amazing universe in which we live.